We hear a lot of perspectives on the Mankind podcast. Inclusion of a guest is not an endorsement of their views, and the opinions expressed here do not always represent the mission or values of the Mankind Project USA.
Looks like the rain has gone.
Well, g'day and welcome to another live recording of the Mankind Podcast, the show where we break the molds of modern manhood to prove there is more than one way to be a man. And today we're joined by Lee Benson. Now, oh gosh, I'm so excited for this. Now, as many of you know, I am a young father. My daughter just turned one, and I have this, I don't know if it's a good thing, I don't know if it's a bad thing, I don't know if it's neutral, but I'm constantly trying to cross the river too early with parenting tips and things that aren't necessarily applicable to a one-year-old. And when a friend of mine brought Lee to my attention and I started to look into you a bit, Lee, I instantly got excited about, you know, your latest book, Value Creation Kid, and its message. So, mate, I'm grateful that you've taken the time to be here today. Many of us in this organization and abroad are parents and probably can relate a lot to this topic, whether in retrospect or earlier in the process as I am. So, mate, I'm grateful that you're here. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Brandon. Thank you.
So, mate, you have a storied past with business success and there's a lot to pull there, but really focusing now on Value Creation Kid, what was the calling to write this book and how is it close to you in your life?
Yeah, for me, it's this whole concept of holistic value creation. So it's material value creation, which is what most people think about, but it's also emotional energy value creation and it's spiritual value creation. And I happen to think that emotional energy or positive emotional energy is the scarcest commodity on the planet, because when that's running on 9 or 10, your arm could fall off and you'd go, whatever, I've got another one. You keep plowing forward to create more value in the world. When it's on, you know, 0 or 1, you get a flat tire and it runs your week. And so getting this concept of value creation out into the world and starting really early with kids, I don't think there's a better mission or path for me to be on.
Hmm. And can you explain those energies again?
Yeah, the three buckets: material, emotional, and spiritual value creation.
Okay.
And when we talk about value creation, most people go right to money and they'll say things like, well, it can't all be about the money. And mm-hmm. And a lot of times I think it's just virtue signaling to say, oh, I'm better than that, rather than, you know, what they really mean, because money's important. We all need to have a foundational lifestyle that makes sense for what we want to do. And,
sure.
And, you know, if, you know, even on the extremes, if wealth and influence or power is applied with virtue, mm-hmm. it creates value in the world at scale. If it's applied without virtue, it takes value out of the world at scale. And when I think about, you know, the kids today, they're at home, and how do families talk about creating value? What's your job for the family, you know, et cetera. And then we put them into the K-12 system here in the United States, and they're going through and, you know, basically being told, you know, get a good grade, get a diploma, get a degree, get a job. And in that environment, kids are doing what they think they're supposed to do. And how am I seen? And that's all the extrinsic mm-hmm. motivation, which isn't nearly as healthy as intrinsic. And I firmly believe and know that the purpose of an education is to create value in the world. And if we ingrain that into the kids before they get to K-12, now they start doing what they're, or I guess a better way to say it, they start discovering what they were meant to do as they go through that process. And so now you've got this internal intrinsic motivation, self-esteem, all of this stuff rising. And ultimately what I'm looking for is, and every parent can answer this question, when you launch your high school student, you know, graduating into adulthood, what would the characteristics look like to say, hey, we really won? I can go through my list. I think the children should be self-reliant as they pass into adulthood. They're financially competent. If they want to be, they could be financially independent. I certainly was when I left high school, even before then. They can think critically. They go forth to create value in the world in a win-win way. They understand and value the strength of family and community. that would be an amazing adult going into the world. And if they can think critically and they think about value creation, they won't fall for a lot of the shenanigans that are going on out there right now in social media, mainstream media. They just won't be as easily manipulated when they work backwards from what I'm describing here, and they get them ready for adulthood in the right way.
There's a lot to pull there, but to me, it sounds like a lot of what you're promoting or the message you're promoting is to help individuals understand that, you know, life isn't zero sum. There isn't just give and take. If we go from a lens or a focus on how can I make someone else's journey lighter? How can I provide value? How can I solve problems with, and then from that lens, pick the degree or pick the path, get the trade.
Well, let me jump into one thing that you said. So make the path a little bit, you know, lighter or easier. You know, the subtitle for the book, you know, the book is Value Creation Kid, and the subtitle being the healthy struggles your children need to succeed. And with the best of intentions, you know, parents are, and adults in general are trying to take all struggle away from kids, thinking this is actually going to be good for them. So by the time they become an adult, they're not even close to ready. They now go into what I would call the emerging adult phase. And that's going to be from 18 to maybe as old as 36 years old before they can actually be an adult, because we didn't prepare them for that. Right. And in the book, we talk about this, and I say we, because my co-author is Scott Donnell, amazing young man. And we talk about this concept of the value creation cycle. And so you struggle to get a capability, build confidence, and then use that to create value. And then each time you go through that value creation cycle, take bigger and bigger steps. Mm-hmm. And struggle is, it's incredibly necessary. And ideally, and we talk a lot about this in the book, parents can design healthy struggles to take the children from, you know, the day they come home from the hospital to the time they launch into adulthood through this sort of adult training to give them all of the, you know, the confidence and the self-reliance and all the other things that I was talking about. So struggle is incredibly important. If I go back to my childhood, it was a toxic and at times a very dangerous environment. It wasn't just dysfunctional, which I think dysfunctional is kind of normal for most families in some ways. But it wasn't good and it wasn't healthy. And so there were struggles there that, you know, that weren't great. And they certainly, I wouldn't call them, you know, all healthy for sure. But any struggle can be leveraged to create more value in the world. And, you know, when people ask me, hey, where'd you get your start? Because I'm on my seventh company. I've started from scratch. I've had exits from a few million dollars to well into nine figures. I've done really well in the material value creation side. But I literally got my start pulling weeds for 25 cents an hour when I was, you know, 6-7 years old. And in the late 60s, to date myself, you could buy two candy bars and have change. You know, that was great. And then I was shoveling snow, and now I fourfolded the amount of money I made per hour. Then I'm mowing lawns. I've got a paper route. I got four paper routes. I'm a dishwasher, a busboy, a cook. And by the time I was kicked out of the house, the beginning of my senior year in high school, I was already financially independent and very competent. And I could trust this whole value creation world that was outside the friends and family circle. And I would exchange my best efforts for the accumulated best efforts of neighbors and eventually a restaurant, and they would reward me for my best efforts. And that was fantastic. I just kept building on it. And that whole piece really, in a lot of ways, saved me, because I have siblings that really struggled. You know, one of them in and out of prison four times before I lost touch with him. You know, kind of a mess, but I had this whole value creation world that I could completely trust. And the more value I created, the more I got in return. And it really helped me on the emotional energy side. And it certainly helped me on the connectedness side, on the spiritual side as well, not just financially.
I want to pull on the thread for the value creation cycle, because you mentioned the struggle, confidence, and then value as a result. And I can't help but see a likeness between it and the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. Are you familiar?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Most stories and movies follow that same journey. And what it is, it frames, you know, it helps us get emotionally invested in the hero. in the protagonist that we're watching. And there's no hero's journey that doesn't involve immense struggle and setbacks and challenges. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we have to love every second of them. It's just the awareness that, ooh, this struggle, this tension, it's like reps in the gym, right? It's challenging, it hurts, it sucks, mm-hmm. but we know that there's a greater result that we're working towards. Bring it back. It's very easy for me, and I may be able to speak on behalf of the listeners, to interview, discuss, hear conversations with people like yourself, Lee, who have been immensely successful, just from what I know, material value creation side of things. I'm sure on many others, just haven't got that layer yet with you, that will go, well, Lee just has something that I don't. He was born with something that I don't, even though his circumstances were difficult, right? It's natural to put these barriers, in turn, create permission to mm-hmm. get off the track, to not put in the effort, to not go shovel the snow. Who or what was it that helped you identify the value, the power of creating that value and the reward that would come from it? Is it something that you would just came to you in a blinding flash of light, or was there a mentor? Was there a model that helped you get out of your home circumstance?
Really didn't have much in the way of mentors or role models when I was a kid. And I go back to when this neighbor, you know, she asked me unsolicited, hey, would you pull weeds in my garden for 25 cents an hour? Like, sure. Okay. What do I do? How do I do? She gave me gloves and I'm kind of going through it. I, you know, remember back then. And when I got paid, I felt really good about myself. That was really cool. And I built on that with the extra things that I did. That's what really saved me going through it. And I've learned, you know, I like your point about it's like going to the gym. I think all struggles, emotionally, mentally, physically, all of that can make us stronger if we have the right mindset around it. Mm-hmm. It's important. And I've learned, and I think this is such a great thing, to completely trust the struggle. So most adults will say, oh, of course you have to struggle. That's how you get stronger. They'll reference things like the hero's journey and all of it. And then I watch them struggle a little bit and they act like little victims. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, wait a minute. You said you understood the concept, but you're not believing it and living it. And the harder it gets with me, I actually get an interesting, you know, I just think about the last, you know, 5-10 years, I get this interesting warmness inside. I go, well, this is going to be so cool when I come out the other side. And the struggle is important. And anybody starting a business from scratch and it's really hard. Yep. Welcome to startup land. It's really hard. And these are healthy struggles that you need to create a lot more value in the future. And everything that I've done, it wasn't an overnight success. It for me, and I'm sure there's people that can go faster, but this isn't so uncommon. It's probably more the norm. Each thing that was wildly successful took me about 7 years before it got traction. You know, banging my head against the wall, everybody saying, I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people, it's going to fail, you know, for all the reasons people do that stuff to, you know, if you succeed, it makes me look like I'm not as good or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was so focused on creating value. I don't stick my head up and compare myself to others. I'm just doing these things to create value in the world and it works. So what gave me that drive? It was early on and seeing the value of this and running at it, starting with pulling weeds. And I've worked with, gosh, thousands of high school students. And I'd say in the last, you know, 10 years, probably have spoken in smaller groups, 25 to 50 high school seniors, mostly about the mm-hmm. virtues of entrepreneurship. And one of the questions I asked, do you feel better about yourself when you're fully self-reliant? Do you think you would as an adult, or when you're dependent on somebody else, you know, a community, the government, your family to support you? I can't even finish the sentence. And it's like self-reliance. They all want that. Of course they feel better about themselves. Mm-hmm. So there's something here that we're not leveraging the way we could. And I think parents can really help with that and create an environment from which each child discovers their value creation superpowers and how they want to present that to the world. And, you know, Brandon, I'm finding that language is resonating even with kids as young as 6 years old, like really resonating with them. It is so, so cool.
I love that kids are taking this up. I love that, yeah, that they are starting to, when you ask them the honest question, they're going, yeah, me, I want to be self-reliant. Because I think, I mean, high school wasn't that long ago for me. I remember just wanting to get out of there.
right? I just wanted to get out of there, to have independence, to exercise freedom and discover what it was like to feel like an adult. And I definitely felt after high school, the pull to go back to safety and comfort at home with mum and dad, where I could count on 3 meals a day and a warm bed and roof over my head. I certainly had a different experience coming out of high school than yourself, Lee. So I feel like I can relate to both the cozy comfort and familiarity of that comfort zone, but also the reward that comes from taking those risks. I sold my business at 25 to move to the States, and it was terrifying. It was scary. And I sold it for pennies because I did it in like 12 weeks because I realized that I had to get out of the country to discover who I was. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have my wife, my child, this home, the life that we've created together, if it wasn't for that terrifying leap and that embracing of the struggle and the challenge. And so, I love that you're phrasing this and making it accessible to kids to understand the benefit of the struggle. Mm-hmm. Can you link it to a time? Is there anything on the macro level that you think has resulted in this general malaise that we're seeing with young people these days? I mean, even before the pandemic, more, especially men, more adults are living at home with their parents than the Great Depression. Yeah. And this was before the pandemic. So can you, is there anything on a macro level that could relate to this? Because I understand that people want to blame boomers. They want to blame Gen X. Mm. What have you found in your research and in your experience to link to this?
To me, I think all of this is human nature. It's timeless. What works is timeless. You know, they like to divide people up depending on when they were born, as they're completely different. No, they're not. They're human beings. Human nature is exactly the same. But when you change the rules of engagement, you change the environment, human nature presents itself differently. So I think about in the work I do with organizations, the people are the same. They're human beings in government organizations, nonprofit, private for-profit companies, public for-profit companies. And because the rules of engagement are different, they all act differently in those different environments. Like completely different,
interesting
in a lot of ways, and so if we have this environment where things get easier and easier and easier, and then culturally in the country, which kind of touches all of these buckets that I just mentioned in organizations, that somehow it's good if you take struggle away, and it's bad if there's any struggle at all. Mm-hmm. I hear from parents they've. My child has two therapists and she's on three different drugs, for anxiety and other things. Like, oh my gosh, because a kid looked at her sideways at school and she's, depressed and everything else. I mean, that getting along in the world is a healthy struggle for kids, so how do we talk about it? But we've gone to this place where struggle's bad. Everything is a lot easier. And so human nature is driving everyone, at least the majority of the population, into thinking that that's right and forgetting that we have to go to the struggle gym emotionally, mentally, and physically to get stronger and create more value in the world.
Yeah.
So I think this is a normal cycle when things get really tough, around the last world war. I mean, look what everybody did to fight for what they thought was right, especially here in America, and freedoms, individual rights, liberty, et cetera. And then we've forgotten that. We're generations away from it. And most kids that I talk to, young adults today, my gosh, they can't name most countries, hardly any other countries around the world. You ask them what country borders the United States, they can't say Canada or Mexico. They'll say Florida.
There's an argument for Florida being its own country.
these are college students, and they don't appreciate what we have. And so I think we've got some leadership, not to go too far down this road, but leadership globally that's taking advantage of that. And it's what I said earlier, that wealth and power and influence applied with virtue creates value of the world at scale. Without virtue, can take it away. And my definition of practicing virtue is you have to do two things. You have to create value in the world intentionally and measurably. Virtue signaling is saying, I donate to a charity, or I'm part of this group or that group, but you're not really leaning in and creating values. That's virtue signaling. Mm-hmm. But virtue is you're measurably creating value. And at the same time, you have to lean in and push back things that are trying to take value out of the world. And it could be you know, at the micro level all the way to the biggest macro scale level, you know, coming in. And some people will say, you know, so-and-so has way too much money. If I had the money, I would use it differently. I said, you know, that sounds a lot like virtue signaling, and who are we to tell anybody what is enough? However, I do think it's okay to be judgmental around the fact that they're applying it without virtue and hurting the world, like the net effect is going backwards to their benefit. But I'd rather have a few trillionaires running around the world creating value at scale with virtue. That'd be incredible. How does that resonate with you, Brandon, when I talk about that?
It does resonate. I mean, there's a lot there, but what really comes alive in me is this understanding of, and I've become more politically aware as I've moved to the States, because I've never lived anywhere in the world where people are more fixated on politics than this country. Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding is, especially with the two-party system, nothing bands people together more than a mutual disdain for someone who disagrees with them, who doesn't agree in the same ideology. And politicians are using a lot of pain to galvanize people. They're using a lot of negativity to galvanize people. You've been hard done by. You know, you are the one suffering because of this other group or this other political ideology or whatever. And people are banding together and getting, you know, they're jumping in the mud around it. And there's nothing really generative about the conversations that are being had in those spaces or the echo chambers that are creating, as opposed to, yes, it's okay to, there are great injustices in the world that need to be brought to our attention. Okay, what are we going to do about it? What are some steps forward? I'm not, as an individual, going to change the world tomorrow just by wishing it into existence. I need to start small. How about my local community? How can I support the men in Chattanooga and create spaces for them where they can feel safe, not comfortable, but safe, to do their work and take off their mask and connect on a deeper level with other men? I would start there, as opposed to across the entire country and blaming some big bad or constantly putting my energy and attention towards some enemy or villain, when at the end of the day, it's my work. I got to do my work. I got to grow in the way I need to be to make that happen. It makes me think about living above and below the line, which is this simple model that below the line is blame, excuses, and denial. It's someone else's fault. It's someone else's problem. It's relinquishing power to do anything about it. And that's where victims live. And then there's above the line, which is ownership, accountability, and responsibility, which is like, I need to take ownership for everything good or bad that is impacting me in my life, create accountability with others that are going to hold me to my agreement and my word, and responsibility. Only I can do something about it at the end of the day. Now, that being said, my circumstances growing up were far more comfortable and easier than most. And I think there are those, I'm going on a rant here, but there are those who justifiably, based on their life experiences, may end up in that mindset of below the line, blame, excuses, and denial. I haven't walked in their shoes. I can't judge them for that. However, me and Boyce and my co-host talk about this a lot. Yes, that thing happened to me. I'm the only one who has the agency to do something about it. Mm-hmm. No one else can rescue me for that.
Yeah. Well, so, Brandon, let's use this whole value creation approach. And
let's see.
And then the question would be, hey, you went through that time that was quite the struggle. How are you leveraging it to create more value in the world? Not reinforcing it.
Right.
You know, we talk to folks, oh, you poor thing, that's so terrible. I had a partial knee replacement surgery early this year, and I had some complications medically, and it was a mess for a while. And most people's response, oh, you poor thing, oh, I'm so sorry. My co-author, he goes, how are you leveraging that to create more value? Mm-hmm. And that's the right question. Yes. I said, you know, when I can't do things like play guitar, go on a hike, that's not good. And that was the case. That was a situation I was in for months, and now I can. So even when I'm emotionally a place where I just don't have the motivation to do it, I'm going to do it because I can do it right now. I actually get to do this. So that's a great way to think about when I'm emotional, my emotional energy is a little bit lower and I don't have the motivation to, you know, finish writing a book or do something else that I'm doing. I'm just going to plow in and do it. And that's how I'm leveraging even that little struggle. But you get my point here.
Absolutely. Yeah. You reframe it. How has this happened for me as opposed to this happened to me?
100%.
Yeah. And look, I want to empathize with those who may be listening that just can't relate to that narrative, because the environment you were raised in didn't promote that narrative, right? There are those who are raised in environments where, like, there's nature, there's nurture, and the nurturing that they're experiencing growing up tells them nothing but these are the only avenues and paths that you can go down in life.
Yeah.
And there are those that break the mold, and to find out who they are, who are those mentors, who are the ones challenging that narrative and proving that there's a different way of living, buy their books, listen to their CDs, who listens to CDs, but really dive in and say, hey, there is a different way. There's a way to get out of this. Are you able to create a distinction, Lee, between kind of struggle versus trauma? Because I think the two can be intertwined or interlinked and can kind of muddy the waters. And you talk about healthy struggle. How does trauma, where does it sit in relation to struggle, and how can we distinguish the difference?
Yeah, all struggle does not equal trauma. And I think we've gone way too far the other way. Hurt feelings all of a sudden is now considered trauma. Mm-hmm. And it's just not. And you can be exposed to horrific things and still choose to leverage it to create value. And I think about Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, and I read it at least once a year.
Yeah.
That's kind of the extreme of trauma and everything that he was around, but he leveraged it to impact, I would say, tens of millions of people or more on the planet in a positive way to get them to think about things. So we want, you know, kind of back to our children, we want to design healthy struggles, and we need to be okay as parents and family members to let them bounce off the wall as they go through the struggle, tell them we love them, and that's unconditional, and this is why you're going through it, and tell me what you're learning and how you're leveraging it to create more value, but be okay with it. And then occasionally when it is trauma, we don't want real trauma, if at all possible, but it's not possible to avoid it across the board for everyone. You just can't. So when it does happen, how do we reframe it? As you said, I like that. And, you know, get them to see how they can leverage it to help others and create more value in their life. And I believe when you focus on value creation, sort of a mindset, and how will I create value in the world, that starts to give you, directionally, a real purpose. And so your identity, if you think about a child, maybe the identity is, hey, I'm a football star, and then they get injured and they can't play football, and then they're deeply depressed for a long time. But if their primary motivation, sort of identity and purpose in the world was to create value, maybe it was emotional energy value, and this person was incredible on the team, you know, to get everybody riled up to win the games. Okay, now can't play football, but I can still create emotional energy value. Be that person when you come into the room, it elevates everybody's emotional energy. And some kids have superpowers there, which also says if they're down, they can take a room down with them too, right? But if they understand what's going on and how to leverage it, how incredible. Now I'm not tied to any extrinsically motivated sort of thing and how people see me. And even though, I've had good success materially in that bucket, I think my strongest value creation bucket is emotional energy. And if you think about leaders and organizations, we should be creating these and fostering these environments where every team member is, intrinsically motivated and empowered to create more and more value all the time. If we as leaders don't create that environment with our energy coming in and all the things that we set up and the rules of engagement, for the team to work together, you're going to get half or less the productive energy that you're looking for. And so for me, I always, and I don't totally know where I got this, but I always passionately talk about what's possible and engage everybody in productive conversations and actions to move in that direction to make it happen. that's all I do. And that becomes really infectious, especially today in a world where everybody's talking about what's wrong with things and people and why stuff work. They're all experts on why the world's a mess. That takes energy out of the world, emotional energy out of the world. It's a drain on what's going on. And so this mindset of, hey, material, emotional, spiritual value, everybody plays in all three buckets. I've never met an exception. And spiritual means different things to different people. But if we all thought that and we're all looking to have a net gain, you know, every month and how we contribute to those three buckets, it's completely life-changing. And I have an interesting kid story about applying this because the book only came out in April, if I may share that. And I have my tentacles out to a number of low and middle income families. And my favorite story so far is a dad in Boston texts me and says, hey, my 11-year-old daughter, Mia, said this to me today. Daddy, thank you for saving the dirty dishes for me to help me with my value creation work. So that's really cool. And he was beside himself like, oh, this is so great. And then fast forward, he calls me in June and he says, let me tell you how value creation summer is going. So what do you mean value creation summer? And he goes, well, it used to be my daughters, 11-year-old and a 7-year-old, 8-year-old. They would argue over who had to do the work. And now they're arguing over who gets to do the work. And then the quick third part of the story is the older one goes to middle school for the first time. And on day one, as part of their process, they meet with a counselor. On day two, the counselor calls the dad and says, tell me everything about value creation summer, because I'm going to use this language with all the kids I work with, the parents that I work with. So that's how much it resonated in just a few months with a young child going into middle school. And it rubbed off on a counselor who never met the parents, never read the book going forward. So that's how I know we got this language right around value creation, house rules, financial competency, and healthy struggle, and how to think about those four things. And more importantly, how to operationalize them in households so kids can discover their value creation superpowers over time. Motivational nudges don't work. It's the environment we create to help them discover it. You and I, Brandon, can't explain something once and go, oh, they got it now. They'll have all the wisdom we have at this particular time. It's like the impossible task of saying, what would you tell your 16 or 18 or 20-year-old self if you could give them advice? Well, the hardest part is they won't hear anything that I have to say right now because they don't have the life experience to internalize it and take a step from there going forward.
Hey, Boyson.
Brandon, what's happening, man?
Mate, I'll tell you, little one, my daughter, she is becoming more and more her, which is amazing. I'm just eating it up. But when I don't want to eat it up is in the middle of the night, 4 a.m, when she's trying to skip naps and I've got a lot of things to do. That's when things get a little tough.
So what are you leaning on? I mean, yeah, right. I get that. How much coffee are you drinking these days?
Well, mate, you know me. I'm certainly not. I don't like the vices. You know, I've been in the health space for a while and I get a little bit too hooked on those things. So I'm pretty grateful that we had the folks at Magic Mind reach out to provide us and the audience some value with their Magic Mind drink solution. And dude, I can tell you it is blowing my mind.
What's it doing for you? I'll talk about mine, but what's it doing for you?
Well, mate, I think the biggest thing is sustained energy. That's what I need. I need to have the same energy at 10 a.m. as I do need at 2 p.m. But when the energy dips and I've still got work to do and she's crawling all over me, screaming in my ear, that is when I need to be able to push through. And yeah, so I'm not getting the dips. And unlike coffee, I'm sleeping at night, which is amazing.
Yes, the ingredient thing. So that's me too. I've been a coffee dude for a very long time. And when I get into these spaces where I'm just working, and I get too much into the coffee, I end up like frazzled and stomach achy and jittery. And what I'm seeing with Magic Mind is like, I've reduced the amount of coffee I'm actually drinking in the morning, and Magic Mind boosts the focus for me. So for me, it's like, how many things can I juggle in a day? And having that focus without the coffee stuff, without all the coffee downside, I think has been really good for me. And yes, the sleep thing, man, there's some ingredients in this stuff that have totally helped my sleep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I mean, cause you're getting the caffeine from matcha, which is an extended release caffeine as opposed to like an intense rise then dip. It's got all the fancy mushrooms that, you know, everyone's taking these days, including ashwagandha, which gives you that más fuerte kind of energy. And fortunately for us, they've offered us a great discount that us and you, the listeners, have access to get 56% off your first subscription and 20% off a one-time purchase with the unique discount code MANKIND. So if you go to magicmind.com/mankind, you get access to this discount. And like us, you get to enjoy this sustained energy, that más fuerte energy. I can take that into a couple of places. But big fans.
And do. Yes. Check it out. Yes.
Yeah. And I need to get my wife to stop stealing mine, which would be great.
Thanks, Brandon.
So you're simplifying the language so that it could be understood by kids and parents.
Well, like, the book's for parents, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's being able to pass on that message. And it sounds like in many ways, these parents are having to model it themselves. Otherwise, the lesson will be completely lost. Mm-hmm. Lee, you've done a great job setting the scene of the importance of the, you know, the messages in the book and the frameworks. I'd like to get practical and tangible now, like an opportunity to get our hands in the mud and play around with this.
Let's do it. Because
we can talk about this stuff all day. You mentioned the four just now, and I didn't catch how you referenced them. It was like,
yeah,
practical financial literacy. Do you mind giving us an overview and then we can jump into each one?
In the book, we have something we call the gravy stack method. And this is about helping parents create an environment from which kids learn to create value and discover what they were meant to do and their value creation superpowers, et cetera. And we wanted to make it really easy. So the four categories are value creation. Second is house rules. Third is financial competency. And fourth is healthy struggle. So value creation, how do we talk about it? Well, we have three buckets. Again, the material, emotional energy, and spiritual value creation. And then house rules. What's your job for the family? You don't get paid extra for this. It's your job. And it changes as you get older. Two, what are the expenses you pick up as a child? And they change as you get older. At some point, you're kind of covering just about everything before you leave. And then third, how do you make extra money? And we need to give them opportunities to do that. And we like giving them action gigs. You know, it could be washing the car, but you never pay more than you could get it done similar quality down the street. And we have brain gigs, you know, learn about the Constitution as an example. And come back and, you know, talk me through it and apply it. So you have action gigs you get paid for, you have brain gigs, as parents, what you want them to learn and all that. And then financial competency, of course, there's some literacy in there, but we want you to be competent, be able to apply it. And with the house rules, you're giving them the environment and rules of engagement over time to be able to apply these money management skills, you know, how to earn it, how to, you know, spend it smartly, how to save it, invest it, how to give it. Yes. And then the last category is healthy struggle. So almost like, and we talk about this in the book, there's so many examples of, you know, struggles that kids can go through, but it's almost like a boot camp, you know, for kids in a way. And some set it up and say, we have a daddy boot camp, we have a mommy boot camp. And these are the things that they, you know, take the kids through so they become competent in those things, and they might have to struggle with it a little bit. That's the gravy stack method, and again, creating this environment. And then two things I want to say here, like for every listener with kids, if you haven't done this, and I've never met a parent yet that's actually intentionally done it before this book coming out, is identify the characteristics of the ideal graduating high school senior into adulthood would look like for your children. What do you want for them? And I love being able to think critically, being self-reliant, financially competent, wants to create win-win value in the world, not win-lose. I got mine, you didn't get yours, I won. I never would feel good about that.
It's not zero sum.
Yeah, it's not good. But list that out and then work backwards as you implement the gravy stack method. what are the stages? And you could just do blocks of time, you know, between this age and that age, or by each year, what are the things that I want the capability I'd love my child to have to move towards this incredible, capable adult? And you can't explain wisdom and understanding into anybody, in my opinion. You can give them information. They have to connect the dots. They have to go through the struggle.
They have to go through, they have to do the reps.
And that is really, really important. So that's sort of an overview of a practical way to run at this. And you know, I recommend, you know, everybody pick up the book. I'm giving away thousands of copies of this thing. I want this to be in the world at scale in the next 5 years. Scott Donald, my co-author, and I would love to have this being applied in at least 1 million households with the families. And the way I think about it, you know, you fix the kids, they're going to be running the world that I age out in, and I want it to be amazing. Mm-hmm. I do love science fiction and dystopian future movies, but I'm not sure I want to live in it. So but sure. We fix the kids, right, Brandon? We're going to have an amazing world for us later.
I get so excited meeting and interviewing folks like yourself, Lee, that are creating these ripples. Just that young family in Boston. You know, that value creation summer, like, who knows how that's going to knock on. You, in essence, could have been the mentor that you could have really used in those early years. Fortunately, you had the, I don't know, gumption and to do what you needed to do to learn kind of on your own and have the real world give you active feedback in real time. But now, and I shared in the beginning, you know, creating value, lightening the load for people. I get in marketing talk, because talking marketing, you're solving problems at the end of the day. People get this book because it's going to solve a problem, in turn think their life's going to be easier. But it's not, there's no absence of doing the work, getting the reps. I want to dive a little bit deeper into practical financial literacy, because I feel like this is something that our schools aren't teaching our kids this. No way. And I don't know if that's by design. I don't want to put the tinfoil hat on, but there are a lot of young people getting into remarkable amounts of debt. There's this lifestyle creep where they have to be seen as having the nicest handbag, car, whatever, for status. And then there's those quiet achievers that are doing the work and identify the, you know, the impact and the importance of compound interest and all the rest. It sounds like there's really no way. What excites me about this is parents then have to model this. They have to show that they're what it looks like to be financially literate. What are some examples of this that you've seen, or maybe some little anecdotes that frame how someone listening right now can begin to have conversations around money with their kids?
Well, and you know, Scott and I went back and forth on financial literacy, and I went right to, it has to be financial competence. You have to prove you can apply it. Who cares if you can define the terms? You have to be able to apply it. And like I was, you know, when I was kicked out of the house at the beginning of my senior year in high school, I spent one night in my truck that I already purchased with my own money. The next night I got an apartment. Back then it was only $265 a month for a two bedroom, two bath apartment. Times have changed.
Yeah.
And it was a non-event for me to do it, and it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. It was a weird struggle. It felt interesting, but it was a super healthy struggle for me, and I wouldn't change anything going forward. And what I was talking about earlier between how you think about, talk about value creation, the house rules, this is how you're setting them up. You've given them opportunities to earn extra money. You're having them pick up more and more expenses over time, so they have to learn to manage it. And, you know, hey, I don't have money to go to a movie with my friends. Well, this is one of your expenses, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but come on, help me out. No, we talked about this. You could have managed it better. You didn't have to buy the, you know, $200 Nikes or whatever, you know, that you bought. So over time, they're learning this. It's not something we explain once and get through. So the gravy stack method very intentionally helps them with what you're asking here to develop that over time.
So no allowance.
Well, there's some that say allowance is socialism.
Allowance is socialism. Interesting.
So kind of is, just because you get this.
Okay.
Which it's
just by being, you get this.
Just being. But if my job early on, once you can start doing it, is to, you know, brush my teeth, keep my room clean, make my bed eventually, you know, maybe it's, you know, doing the dishes, mowing the lawn, cooking dinner on Thursdays, that, you know, your job increases over time, and the expenses that the parents pick up decrease over time. I've even seen some parents that made the kids at a certain age start paying for dental visits if they get a cavity because they're not maintaining their teeth. So
wow,
that's your deal. What a great lesson. And, yeah. And perspective is everything. I remember a few years ago, I was at a charter school and I was talking to a bunch of high school seniors, probably 25 in the classroom, about entrepreneurship. And, you know, I always start out getting a you know, sort of a temperature on the room. Do you sure. you feel like you can go anywhere and, you know, from every, you know, it just do anything you want to do, meet anybody you want to meet. And most of them like, no. And they act like victims. And there's this little girl shaking her head in the room. And I asked her, so what, you know, what's on your mind? And she looks around the room and she says, look, my family's from Tanzania and every one of you in this room have 99 times more opportunity than my family had in Tanzania. So I don't know what you're talking about because they're all acting like victims. I'll never go to college. We don't come for money. We don't have this. We don't have that. And it's all perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a reason why those that will come to this country have, there's so many stories where they came from having virtually nothing and they just conquered everything because they struggled so much. They appreciate what they have here. They go after it. And I, you know, people will follow your passion. Don't do anything unless it resonates. And they just sit back waiting to be impressed by the world. And, you know, and I've heard a number of people say this, and this is fully what I believe. Take your passion with you everywhere you go. Don't wait for the world to impress you to show up and actually be your best. Yeah. I was the best dishwasher the restaurant ever had, the best cook they ever had, the best busboy they ever had, the best paper route delivery boy. I brought my passion with me everywhere.
Yeah.
Isn't that better?
Yeah. It's often said, right, that, you know, it's about timing, waiting for the right time, the right moment. But really, I think what it is, and I can relate because this was very much my mindset for a while, was waiting for the external world to give me permission to take a leap and to take the risk. Whereas no one's going to give me permission. I'm giving them the power. I'm giving them the key to walk through the door, but I have to do that myself. I have to be the one that take the step, the very imperfect step forward.
Yeah.
That may be in the complete opposite direction of where I'm going to end up in 10 years, but who knows at the end of the day.
Well, if you take your passion with you everywhere, it'll expose you to opportunities that you otherwise wouldn't have had.
Too true. That's certainly true in my life. Now, so just something I quickly want to look at for a second. How are you inviting those who may objectively fit in the bucket of victim? Because I think it's easy for victim shaming to occur, to then point out the individual who may be in that victim place, and it's almost like a shaming exercise as opposed to an invitation to get out of the bucket, to do something differently. And you may have heard the example of crabs. If you put crabs in a bucket, when one tries to crawl out, the others will grab it and pull it down back into the bucket. So again, environment may be playing a big role here. So the question is, how do you invite them to look at things a little bit differently as opposed to shame them for being a victim?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, you know, every true victim in varying degrees, they're where they're at. And then the question is, where do I want to go? And
how's that working for you?
My mindset is so important. And if your identity is your victim status, and there are a lot of thought pathogens in the world right now that are taking value out of the world at scale. And victim ideology is definitely one of those for sure. I see it all the time. I'm a woman, therefore everything's going to be harder, and that becomes their identity. I'm black, so everything's going to be harder because I'm black. And I look at everyone and say, you all have equal opportunity to create value in the world. And if you want to keep wearing that emotional anchor, then do it. And okay, so somebody said something bad, or they discriminated in some way for their advantage in the workplace. There are jerks everywhere, regardless of what they look like. Welcome to the world and what's happening. So my question is, what would you like the rest of the life to be and your life to be? And I know that's easy to say, but the mindset is everything. Like, I don't think we have any idea what we're capable of doing from a value creation standpoint, or the other direction, unfortunately. We don't have any idea. And there's so many dots that we can connect with everybody I've ever met in their lives to create more value way faster moving forward from where they're at. And so it's a mindset shift to make that happen. And, you know, there's a lot of folks out there, we'll talk about their journeys. You know, they grew up in this town, and the mindset is you never leave and it's always going to be bad. And they're fully caught up in it. And that's their excuse, as you were saying. And then for whatever reason, they break out of it and they come back and they go, oh my gosh, the only thing holding me here was my mindset. It wasn't anything else.
Right.
So I know this is not easy. It's easy to say, but to actually do it, you know, don't let yourself go down that dark hole. And I believe if you focus on value creation, where am I creating value in the world? Doesn't have to be, it's in some giant scale, you know, one person at a time. You know, I think, Brandon, you could impact one person that listens to your podcast in a way that changes the world. Like, we don't really know.
Sure.
Where that goes. So I'm not sure I fully answered your question. I wish there was a three-step process and yeah. Oh, this is so easy. Just breathe this way and look to the left and you're going to be in great shape. No, but decide what you want to be. And if you want to hold on to your victim status and this is my identity for the rest of my life, and I'm going to go out of my way to get everybody to fully understand why it's been so hard on me, how would you react to somebody else doing that? And I've met a number of folks that they hold on to it like their life depended on it. So unhealthy.
Well, it's I think if we bring it back to Viktor Frankl, to be Jewish in Europe during, you know, in the build-up and during the Second World War, I mean, the man was in a concentration camp. Like, immeasurable pain and suffering that he witnessed and that he experienced personally. And the overarching message of the book is, it's not what happens to you, it's the meaning you make of it. Two people can experience a similar experience and have completely different ideas about the impact it has on their lives and their identity. And I'm in no way gonna stand here and say, having not experienced someone else's life, hey, just get up and do it, but at least invite them to look at examples of people in their circumstances that have gotten out of the bucket, mm-hmm. that have changed their circumstances, that have changed their family tree, that have been the first to go to college and create value in the world. I love the overriding message of what you're sharing, Lee, is that, you know, how can we contribute, give, create value as opposed to just take? And that's, it's very hard to tip those scales in the opposite direction because we're huge consumers, especially over here in the West.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not a, you know, well-educated psychologist, but my experience in the real world with real people is when they focus on creating value, that's been the best path to get out of the victim ideology, that thought pathogen, you know, that's mm-hmm. going on. It's terrible that certain things happen for sure. It's what you do with it and your, mm-hmm. and your mindset. When they focus on creating value in those three buckets in different proportions, it's the best path to get people out that I've ever seen.
I mean, look at AA. When people go through the 12 steps, they're encouraged to then facilitate the 12-step program. And that in turn keeps them clean.
Yes.
That in turn gives them something to hope for, to work for.
That's value.
Yeah. Fantastic. Lee, last thing I want to ask you before we wrap things up. You shared before a million, you know, impacting a million lives with this book in the next 5 years. I think I heard you share, which I think is a fantastic goal. What does the world look like when that happens? How do things change on the macro level when we're starting to raise a new generation of kids that have a focus on providing and creating value in the world?
Yeah, I think that's enough. So if it's in a million households and there's an average of two kids in each household, to have that many parents and that many kids going out in the world, creating value, they're self-reliant, they think critically, it's all about win-win. That's enough to make a dent in a really good way. And yeah. I would love to change the culture, you know, in this country for sure. It's where I was born, where I live. But eventually the whole world, to make value creation the culture, connect culture to value creation instead of what's wrong with everybody and everything and why stuff won't work. And unfortunately, we have a lot of leaders that I don't think are applying their positions with virtue. And so they'd like, as you said earlier, to keep people in a state of conflict because it's easier to leverage that to get what they want. And I'm not part of any political party, never will be. I'm
politically homeless. Welcome to the streets.
Politically homeless. And everything should be about creating better and better conditions for the citizenry to work, live, learn, and play at a lower relative cost, which is the return on taxpayer investment. And that's how we know we're doing the right work. And I am speaking to leadership at all levels in government about these concepts. And most of them, there's a couple of states that have asked me to come back and do more work with them because they love this way of thinking about it. And then, you know, as our your listeners are watching the news and everything going on, isn't it really interesting and telling that the majority of the conversation politically is about who's going to win instead of what will create better conditions to work, live, learn, and play for the citizenry? Are we happy with the policies that literally more than doubled grocery bills in the last 3-4 years? And you want more of that because they've told you to be mad at something else?
Yeah.
Don't be played anymore. I mean, that's like my biggest message is, go down to substance, not style, policy, not personality. What's going to create better conditions for you, your family, the communities that are important to you to work, live, learn, and play? And more people like you and I need to get involved in that process. And I certainly have the ear of a lot of elected officials across the country, and I'm going to keep pushing. I have to.
Beautiful. Well, Lee, mate, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I'm grateful that you took the time to share about your work and what you're doing and the message of the Value Creation Kid. For those that want to find out more, there are going to be links in the show notes to Value Creation Kid that you can get your hands on a copy yourself. And Lee, for those that want to find out more about you and follow your journey, where can they find you?
Please go to my website, which is etw.com, and you can learn a lot about myself. If you're interested, connect with me on LinkedIn and let's all go forward and create more value in the world. Let's change it.
Fantastic. Beautiful. Well, Lee, thank you. And of course, huge thanks goes to you, all of you that joined us live today for this conversation. Without your listenership, without you turning up each and every week and applying the lessons that we draw from these phenomenal guests that join us each week, this show wouldn't be a thing. So this is all for you. I'm grateful for you. Keep doing the work. And lots of love. We'll see you next week. This has been another episode of the Mankind Podcast, produced in association with the Mankind Project USA. We have been your hosts, Boyson Hodgson, and myself, Brandon Clift, and we want to thank our guests for joining us today and imparting their wisdom from their experiences in this amazing journey called life. If you want to find out more about today's guests and support them in their mission, you can find links to them in the show notes. Now, if you have found gold and insights that you believe could benefit your loved ones and those you care about, be sure to share it with them. And of course, we are always grateful for a rating and review of the show on iTunes. Now, above all else, we've got to thank you, the listener, because through your attention and your support, you have made it possible for us to let men all over the world know that they are not alone and that there is more than one way to be a man. And if something in this episode has touched you, then perhaps it is the call to action to get involved in men's work. With live trainings happening constantly and in-person trainings happening all over the world, the Mankind Project definitely has something for you. Now, if you've enjoyed the music in this episode and all of our episodes, be sure to check out Jim Donovan and the Sun King Warriors. I have links to them in the show notes. And lastly, just know, what it means to me to be a man is completely different than what it means for you. That is the beauty of this journey. So if you are looking for guidance, support, and community as you begin to unpack and dive deeper into your men's work journey, then you know where to find us. Same place, same time, next week. Lots of love. We'll see you then.